And joining me right now here on the Mark Mosey Show to go over the latest on the NBA playoffs and how his New York Knicks got right last night there at the Garden is my good friend Chris Bonanno with the Hometown News. Chris, how you doing today?
Doing better after last night, right? It's a heck of a performance by the Knicks. Series is far from over, but it's there was a lot of doom and gloom going into last night, and obviously the Knicks responded in a big way, so we'll see if that can continue, and we'll see if the Rangers can abate the doom and gloom as well.
Is that a perfect example of why you don't bet on sports? From what happened in Game 4 in Indiana to what happened last night in New York, where it's the 30-point swing with the wins?
I think one of the things, and you know, the games, there was a game close in Indiana, and there was two games close in New York, but it really does illustrate how home court, I think home court or home field advantage in the NBA is greater than any other sport. I don't know how you feel about it. I think only the NFL could compare. Maybe if you want to say college has maybe a little bit more pronounced home court or home field advantage, okay. But as far as our professional sports are concerned, I think that there is no bigger home advantage than having home in the NBA playoffs. It's just such a dramatic swing. And it's weird how, you know, having fans on your side or not having them on their side can change. Because it's not like baseball, right, where there's different dimensions. It's not like football where it's, you know, one field is turf or the other is like a dome or whatever. It's the same court. You know, there's no wind blowing through there. It's just, it's a dramatic turn of events. And the Knicks look like a completely different team that looked like they had wind in their sails again, right?
Yeah.
It looked like completely running on empty on Sunday. And last night, they looked like they could go all night. It's to out rebound the Pacers 53-29. I mean, Isaiah Hartenstein with 17 rebounds. I think he had like 12 offensive rebounds. Just an insane total. They out hustled the Pacers last night, flat out.
All right, are we going to do this? The hierarchy. Where does home court matter the most in our pro sports? So you're going. Let's clarify this with Chris Bonanno. You think NBA home court matters the most of any sport?
Now, I think we should also clarify. I think home court matters more in the playoffs. Like, your crowd is more energized. I think there's less variance in the effort level. Like, okay, if you have home court, but it's your third game in four nights, like, you know. So I think there's variables in the regular season. But if we just want to take for the playoffs, I think the NBA has the greatest home court advantage.
Does hockey, is that the where it does not matter whatsoever, having home court or ice?
I wouldn't say it matters none, but I would say of the four sports, it matters the least. The thing about baseball, and I think at times we've seen baseball not have it, but what's interesting about baseball is the actual parks. Like, you know, as an example, right, in theory, the Yankees would have a bunch of left-handed hitters because they have a short porch of right field. So if they go to a park where it's a deep right field, let's say they play in Detroit, for instance, that should favor the Tigers, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond the fans, et cetera. So I think the actual ballpark composition matters there. So I would rank it NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL.
Football, especially NFL with playoffs, elements matter. Okay. If it's Baltimore and Kansas City, like we have for the AFC Championship game, no, both teams play in cold weather. But I'm sorry to say this.
Sure.
The Dolphins wanted no business of going to Kansas City for that playoff game. And it showed
up. No, they were beat up by the time they got up there. But yes, I agree. I think that mattered a heck of a lot. So that's an interesting discussion because in January, Miami wouldn't have the home field advantage that it would have in September, right? Because if they had won that game and the Bills or the Steelers, I think it was the Steelers that would have had to come down. The Steelers would have had to have played in like 70 degree weather. So that wouldn't have been a big deal, right?
Yeah.
But going to negative whatever it was in Kansas City, that was a really, really big deal.
All right. Your Yankees, right field home run. What is it? 310? What is that?
It's 310 down the line, I believe.
So that helps.
It's a very short porch, but yeah, it's helpful. If I mean, not every team that they've had. They've actually had some right-handed dominant teams, but it's just an example. Mm-hmm. You know, you could say the same thing about Fenway and the Green Monster.
Yeah.
You know, I could go on. But a lot of parks don't have an appreciable, you know, like a little wall. Like the Astros have a short left field porch. So that in that respect, it can matter. It could also matter if, like, if you've got a speedy team that likes hitting the ball on the ground and you play on turf, that matters. So there's a lot, and in the playoffs, or you know, Coors Field, for instance, that's a huge home field advantage, right? Because that's just slugging away, right? If you've got a team built on pitching and defense, you've got to go to Coors Field, like, eh. So that's why I put it third with the NHL. But if you look at like the playoff results, like we had the World Series a few years ago, where every single road team won a best of seven game between the Astros and the Nationals. Like that's a really hard thing to overcome in a debate like that. And I realize that we just had a series with the Wolves and the Nuggets where the road team won the first four games. But I think when you get all that noise, and to me, the biggest thing is the roof is closed. And I think that noise makes a big, big difference in that closed atmosphere, as opposed to a lot of your stadiums, obviously, are open air. But I'm curious what you think.
I always think about, my dad and I discussed this, where the Minnesota Twins used to play at the, the Metrodome? Yeah.
Yeah.
They built teams to play in that dome, where they play scrappy and they knew how to hit the ball on the ground. And then when they moved to that beautiful outdoor ballpark, they didn't win at first because they didn't have teams who were built for that ballpark. I think about that. I think the Tampa Bay Rays build teams to play in that terrible stadium in St. Pete. As well, with the way they play. I'll go, all right, so you're saying, all right, okay, let's clarify this. Is this for playoff crowds only? Is that what we're going with?
So for the purposes of our discussion, let's say it's just for playoff, because there's too many variables in the regular season, like scheduling, et cetera. But let's just say for this discussion, it's a playoff. Now, a lot also depends. Again, you bring up the Rays. Mm. Okay, so if we had a playoff game between the Rays and the Yankees in Tampa, how many Yankees fans are going to be there?
A lot.
Maybe half Yankees fans.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're kind of just saying in general, in a vacuum. That's how I see it. And I also say because there's not as many tickets available in that arena setting, you're less likely to have more opposing fans in there. You know, how many playoff games have you watched where there's been a lot of opposing fans in there? I'm probably being biased when I say this, but other than the Knicks and the Sixers, I can't really think of one.
All right, I'll go NBA, and I experienced it with the Magic. The home playoff crowd is insane. There's so much energy.
I went there when they played the Raptors a couple years ago. It was great.
Insane. I will say this, home playoff game for the NFL, same thing. The crowd is out for blood. It's amazing. But all right, I'll go NBA crowd number one because you want the game seven at home. Of any sport, it's like, well, we got to have game seven at home. And you always hear that, Chris. Well, luckily we have game seven at our place. You hear that all the time in basketball. I'll go NBA,
yeah.
NFL two. I'll go, baseball three, hockey four, because you just need a hot goaltender. It doesn't matter where the game is.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much on the same page. So that's exciting. And to your point about game seven, you know, obviously we are located where we're located. If the game position is switched, if that game is in Orlando, Florida instead of Cleveland, Ohio, the Magic go to the second round.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. I really that's a good way of looking at it. All right. Your Knicks won, Chris Bonanno, with the Hometown News. You won big, and you really flex your muscle. But can they win game six in Indiana, or are we going seven now?
So that's the, you know, there was a point brought up on, I think it was Get Up, that I saw briefly this morning, where they said, you know, there is 2 days before the next game. So they don't play tomorrow. They play on Friday. So that's 2 days for the shorthanded Knicks to rest. So we saw what a quick turnaround did to them in game four where they had that Friday night and then they went back the afternoon. So that's what it would be if there's a game seven, Friday night in Indy, game seven on Sunday afternoon in New York.
Yeah.
So you worry about that a little bit. So hopefully, and look, the Knicks have experience. They went on the road. They finished off Philly in Game 6. They weren't resting on, you know, having Game 7 or what have you. They went on and did it. I don't think that many people thought they were going to close Philly out in Game 6. I think most people thought they were going back to Game 7. They certainly are capable of it, right? They probably should have beaten Indiana in Game 3. For as much as, you know, harangue as there's been about, you know, not having OG, they probably should have won that game. Nembhard threw in a kind of a prayer, and the Knicks had a 9-point lead. Having said that, the last time the Knicks were there, they lost by a million. So it's tough, right? Indiana's undefeated at home. They've been very good. It's going to be tough, but it's winnable. The biggest difference for me last night is Jalen Brunson looked like he had his lift back.
Yeah.
Whereas he did not look like he had his lift at all in the last, even though he did well in Game 2, and then Game 3 or 4, he looked like he had no lift. He looked like he had his lift back. I'm not sure what happened in between games. He looked like Jalen Brunson. And beyond that, the team, there were even some guys, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, it's kind of the Isaiah Hartenstein game, but like DiVincenzo, I think, was like 4 for 14 or something like that. Like, he wasn't that good. So there are places they can get more production. We finally had a Deuce McBride game. The difference is guys like Deuce McBride, that generally doesn't travel as well. Like, your role guys don't travel as well. So it's probably like, you know, when the Knicks finished off Philly, it was Jalen Brunson. If they win, it probably starts with Jalen Brunson having like a 40-point game. And you kind of go from there, and you hope, you can't expect to out-rebound the Pacers by 24 again, but you hope that the Knicks can have an edge on the boards and that they control the pace. They played much more their tempo than Indiana's tempo. I thought they controlled tempo better than any game in the series last night. I thought that was a huge difference. And I thought Indiana made a couple of big errors. I don't know why Nesmith wasn't on Brunson for the first half. Halliburton was largely invisible. He was much more aggressive in 2-3-4. So there's some things I'm scratching my head there, but I expect Indiana to come out with a really good effort in Game 6.
I think we're going 7. I think the game that killed the Knicks, Chris Bonanno, was at Game 3, where they should have won. And they could have ended it right there. I just think we're gonna keep
going.
They should have
won.
Yeah, they should have. The good news is
if they do go to 7, they've won 3 games in the series at home. So hopefully they feel, you know, they feel good about that. And I thought potentially Carlisle seemed to indicate that he thought the Pacers were not real ready for the environment last night. So they would have to get obviously ready for that environment should there be a Game 7.
Was that your first, like the Knicks, was that their first blowout of the playoffs? Because every game's close, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every game is close in either direction until the last 2 games.
Yeah.
Which is helping the Knicks in that guys aren't having to go 48, 46 minutes. Like, especially Game 4, guys got pulled pretty quickly. But, like, I think even Josh Hart only played 36 minutes last night. Like, that's for Josh Hart. It's like he's probably going for a run after the game. Like, that's completely unheard of. So, you know, will any little bit they can get is really, really helpful.
How about the Joker? From the standpoint, his stats were 40 points, 12 assists, 0 turnovers, and he destroyed the 4-time Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert.
Well, what I don't understand is I was a little disappointed as a Knicks fan because I was under the impression the NBA playoffs had stopped 5 days ago when we awarded the NBA championship to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That's
the impression that I got from the media, right? One of the great defensive teams ever, and the series is over, and hapless Denver has no chance, and it's 3-2 Denver. You know, he's fantastic, and their bench is not what it was last year. Bruce Brown is not walking through that door. It's not a great bench, but their starting lineup is really good. Now, a big what if, and they blew out Minnesota, so I don't know if it's necessarily the super biggest one, but if Murray's suspended for Game 3, what happens? So I think that's a big bit of a what if, but But I think what we're seeing right now is one team with the championship experience and the other team not. Now, the Wolves didn't have Mike Conley, but it's going to be a restless offseason if you have a 2-0 lead with two games at home. And trust me, as a Rangers fan, I know because they blew that last year, although, again, home ice isn't what home court is. But, yeah, I that's going to be a tough offseason if they come back. I have a feeling it's going seven. I think that the Wolves will win six, and I think the Nuggets will win game seven.
If the Nuggets win game six and win four in a row, should we just say it was a sweep after a while?
I tell you what, in a lot of ways it's worse than a sweep because you allow yourself as a fan to start drifting off to, oh man, how do we match up with Oklahoma City or Dallas? Or,
yeah.
Wow, this is so cool. So in a lot of ways, and again, I'll use the Rangers thing. The Rangers were up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals, up 2 goals on the Lightning in game three, and you began to let yourself drift there. And that's why that was such a stomach punch when they lost four in a row, which is what the Wolves are certainly facing. But it would be tough to feel confident if you're a Wolves fan at this point. Anthony Edwards really didn't show up last night, which was surprising. I'll tell you what, if the Wolves can't stop him with all of that length and all that size and the defensive player of the year, who can? I mean, if you look at it, if it's OKC, I don't have any idea who's guarding Jokic. They have Chet Holmgren, which does not seem like a great idea, and they don't really have any backup bigs. Like, they would have to really outscore. They'd probably have to get in shootouts with Denver and use their perimeter. It's a tough matchup for them, even though they'd have home court. It could be Dallas, too, who also on paper doesn't look like they have a great matchup for Jokic.
I saw him play right around the holidays last year in Orlando. It's even crazier in person when you see him play the Joker. Because it's like you play pickup basketball at the YMCA or with buddies. And, you know, it's like the over 40 game. And there's that guy that can't really move, but he's big. This guy is 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, and he's running around like a guard out there. And he's passing the ball. Chris, it's worth the price of admission. So I hope you get the chance to see him. I hope you do.
Wild. No, he's fantastic. And there is that compelling matchup that I think everybody's been pointing to for months. And it now especially looks like we might get it, which is the best team in Boston against the defending champ with the best player in Denver. There's something compelling about that matchup. We've got a long way to go, especially in Denver's case, to get there. I would be floored if it wasn't Boston from the East, but, either way, I think that would be a very fun matchup if it were to happen. I think that would be a very compelling draw for the NBA.
How dare you? It should be your Knicks. You have to beat Boston. Come on. You got to do
it. I'll tell you what. So here's what I will say. If it's the Knicks, OG Anunoby has to come back. Adam, first off, just has to. I can't even begin to figure out how they would defend Boston without him. You put Anunoby on Tatum, and then you put DiVincenzo on Brown. He could do all right, I guess. Anunoby is the big piece of the pie, though. And then you got to hope that your threes are on, right? And a big part of how you'd beat them is if they had Mitchell Robinson, too, as a backup big. But it would be a really, really tall order. I'm really focused right now on the Pacers because I don't think the Pacers series is over by a long shot. I mean, you think it's going seven. I could easily see the Pacers winning. In fact, I think most people before last night thought the Pacers were going to win that series. Now who knows, but
yeah,
it's still playing seven guys. It's still, an uphill struggle. But what I like too, what Thibodeau did last night, he inserted Deuce McBride in the starting lineup. Time and time again, the too big thing has not worked, especially at the beginning of the game. So they made that adjustment. They put Deuce McBride on Halliburton. And what they also did was they ran a bunch of pick and rolls involving Halliburton. And Halliburton is such a bad defensive player that they got burned on it.
Let's end with this, with Chris Bonanno. Tonight we released the NFL schedules. I know it's ridiculous, but we're doing that. All right, who's going to have the best one? Is it going to be the Titans again? The Chargers? Who you got?
I've always been, I don't think always. the last couple of years, I think the Chargers have been awesome. Like, I remember the first anime one they did. I've probably watched that one like 10 times because there's like little Easter eggs that you find when like you go in there and they take shots at their opponents, and it's just so masterfully done. Even the way they post it, it's really cool. So I would imagine there's anticipation for that. I remember Seth Rollins did the Bears last year.
Yeah.
That was good. The Titans one we were talking about off air is one we were watching beforehand. So it is, I would imagine, if you work for a social media team for an NFL team, it's your Super Bowl. So this is kind of it. So I'm looking forward to it. I do get a little over how much of a deal this is. Like, does it really need to be a 2-hour release show?
No.
Like, usually these end up leaking, by the way, before then, or they get released right at 8. Nobody, please tell me nobody watches a 2-hour schedule release show. Like, come on. I mean, it's May. It does bother me when we make a big deal of a sport that isn't going to even have a preseason game for 3 months. Like, you turn on ESPN, we're in the middle of the NBA and the NHL, you see, should Dallas fans be worried that the team isn't spending? You know what? It's the off season. Like, we had the draft, we had free agency. Why don't we just let it chill for a little bit, huh? Why don't we go watch the basketball and the hockey? We'll get to that in the summer.
No. How dare you? Not laughing. It never ends with this stuff. I agree with you. It'll be like the day after the Super Bowl. All right, what can the Dallas Cowboys do? Here we go. Like, not win the Super Bowl. There, I gave you the answer. His name is...
And there are other teams in the NFL besides the Dallas Cowboys as well. Like, but it's the same couple teams that are really, really focused on. And I know, I believe it was announced that this will be hyped. Dallas is the first game on Fox with Tom Brady and the broadcast booth. So they're really setting it up. Dallas is playing Cleveland, I believe. And so they're really setting it up for that big overhype. And now you even want to watch Tom Brady in the booth more, maybe after the roast. It's very interesting.
Okay, who does CBS get then for Tony Romo to call the game to go against Fox? What do they do?
That's interesting. So if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this. So if I am proven wrong tonight, I'm not saying this for sure. I believe I read that CBS did not have a game at 4:25 week one because they wanted to get out of the way for this.
Oh, they don't want
this. I think this is part of the NFL.
They don't want the smoke. I see what's going on. That's what it is.
No.
Greg Olsen. Doesn't this feel like some type of WWE storyline where he called the Super Bowl back in February. He's really good. Then he has to go to the B squad for Fox. I think he should like jump ship and what? What are you gonna say?
Well, I deeply empathize with that. So you got to figure, okay, where is he jumping ship to? He's not, so you got Collinsworth on NBC. You've got ESPN is Buck and Aikman. There's no breaking in there. You've got Tony Romo on CBS. So where is he going? I mean, the logical place for him to go, and I don't know that this is an upgrade, but would he give Herb Street a break and do the Thursday games?
He'd be
good.
He'd be good on that.
But you do feel for Greg Olsen. Because I think Greg Olsen is really good, like at his job. I think he's excellent. I think he's well prepared. I don't think he comes across as overbearing. I think he has a really good rapport with Burkhardt. So it does feel kind of bad, but I'm sure Brady will be very good at it. But he is getting pushed aside for the star quarterback is going to get over the star tight end.
Okay.
10 out of 10 times, right? He's the greatest quarterback of all time. So it's like if Michael Jordan tomorrow said, called up ESPN and said, I'd like to broadcast the NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah.
JJ Redick is probably not doing the NBA Finals.
No, he's too busy being the next coach of the Lakers anyway. Don't worry.
That will be fascinating. Yeah, well, he's having a podcast with one of his current players. That would be just a fascinating dynamic. But what LeBron wants, LeBron gets, right?
His name is Chris Bonanno, Hometown News. My man, thanks for your help. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.